You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudy. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence podcast. I am Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With us in the studio this week, we have a very exciting guest, Brooke Shelley, and I'm looking forward to introducing you to her in just a minute. But first, I'm going to be reading an email from a listener, which I know we do all the time because that's how we get questions. But this is not a question. This is a response to a question that has already been answered. This is the discourse. You are participating in real time. A couple of weeks ago, I had the guys from Politically Reactive on the show. That's W. Kamau Bell and Hari Kondabolu. And we chatted about a letter from a woman who had some questions about the guys that she was dating. She was dating a lot of white guys and felt like she wanted some advice on how to figure out, are they dating in a way that's fetishistic? She's Asian. And how do I figure out, like, if he happens to have dated a lot of Asian women, how do I parse that out versus is he thinking of me in ways that are really like stereotypical and offensive? And so we chatted about that for a little while and we got a letter or an email, not a letter, from Caitlin that I'm going to read to you now. I'm so glad that she got in touch with us. She starts, "Hi, boys," which is just a great way to start an email. I'm also going to include myself in this because I was there too, but I just wanted you to know she starts it with, "Hi, boys. I was so thrilled to hear a crossover between my two favorite podcasts that I was compelled to write a response. Here are my thoughts on the quote-unquote yellow fever question that you guys answered with Mallory. As a young third-generation Chinese-Canadian woman living in Vancouver, I know a little something about yellow fever. Because there's a big Asian population in Vancouver, I can't fault a guy for being attracted to Asian women or having a history of dating them. However, I find that there are still a lot of men who fetishize Asian women and have come up with a handy list of red flags. If a man asks, do you speak Chinese? Do you read Chinese? Or do you make whatever takeout dish he's thinking of back at home? And you reply no, he responds with a condescending, oh, that's too bad that you don't stay in touch with your culture. That's a red flag. Speak some fucking Gaelic to me, asshole. If he can't see the irony in asking that new immigrants learn English and not limit themselves to ethnic groups, but still harasses you about having never gone to Chinese school, that's a red flag. If a man asks, so how long have you lived here? And you respond that you were born here. And then his follow-up is, but where were your parents born? It's a red flag. My favorite thing to do in this type of conversation is to mention that my family has been here for 110 years and refer to myself as an old stock Canadian. And if he excuses any of the above behaviors by stating that in Vancouver, white people are really a minority, that's another red flag. But yeah, I just wanted to read that. I think it was great to hear from an actual woman of Asian descent, because that is pretty relevant to the question. So I'm really glad. Thank you, Caitlin, for writing in and letting us know some of the tips that you have found helpful. And I hope that you are able to continue ducking and dodging all of these red flags, no matter how many men try to fling them at you. So with that note, I'd love to introduce you guys to Brooke Shelley. She gave me the following bio to read on her behalf, which is this. Brooke Shelley is a lesbian writer and engineer living in Portland with her cat, Snorri. She travels often and is trying to only give advice on podcasts. Hello, Brooke. Congratulations on traveling so much.
Hey, Mallory. Thanks.
I really like that you included that. It felt very like 1980s newspaper personal ads. Like, she likes to travel.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hobby. I got I finally got the TSA pre thing to make it a little bit easier. So,
is it easier?
Oh my god, it's like being in a different time. I feel like I teleported backwards to like the 80s or 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can wear like my boots and a jacket. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that like officially makes you a world traveler. You're one of those women who travel.
That's
and
right.
When people talk about you, they'll have to say things like, "Well, Brooke's very well traveled." Which I think sounds like 1930s, like high society slang for a lesbian.
I think
like
my, if I were trying to... my profile still says noted sapphist, so I...
Oh, you like your Twitter profile, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Not one of those unrecorded sapphists are you. People make a note of it.
That's right.
Brooke, I'm really excited to have you on the show, not least because you once helped me very memorably terrify another guest of the show, which is that after we saw the movie The Boy, which is about like an evil doll, with my sister, Brooke and I went to a secondhand shop and found the creepiest old China doll that we could and hid it in my sister's bed when we went to her house for a dinner party. And then I waited for her to text me like terrified, incoherent noises later when she found it. And she did.
It still makes me really happy that when we purchased that, the man in the shop was like, oh, are you a collector? And these dolls were not in good shape. They were really scary looking. It's like, no. I think we told him we were just because we wanted to like play along. I didn't want him to...
Oh, I am incapable of like conflict in person, especially when I'm at someone's place of business. Like, I will never disagree with someone who's selling me something or working a cash register. I can't do it. If they say like, oh, you're from Mars, I'll be like, absolutely I am.
So it's
when he was
there.
Like, you're a doll collector, I was like, yep, gonna take these home, lovingly restore them, put them in the display case with the others.
Also, surprisingly difficult to sneak a large porcelain doll into a housewarming party.
It was a real challenge, but we managed to make it work.
We did. I'm proud of us.
All right. Well, with that all said, I think we should get started. We should dive right in. And I would love it if you would take us away with the very first letter.
Yeah, great. So the first letter is, the subject is racist friends. And it starts with, I am biracial of Asian and Caucasian descent. Recently, I woke up to a group message of 50 plus messages from several of my closest friends. They were discussing Black Lives Matter and a recent local shooting, and the blatantly racist, hate-filled, stereotyped messages they were sharing broke my heart and infuriated me. I was so upset I couldn't even respond. I deleted the thread and I tried to forget it, but I can't let it go. Is it too late to say anything? If so, what could I possibly say to these people who until now I thought the world of? Is there any hope of changing their minds, or should I just chalk this up to a life lesson and walk away?
Man, what a thing to wake up to.
Right?
Just like 50 plus messages just letting you know that some of your really close friends believe like terrible racist things.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm surprised that it hasn't come up before, that it took until now and, you know, year of our Lord 2016 to be revealed, but... Yeah.
Yep. You know, some people, I think some people like wear that stuff on the outside really, really proudly. And sometimes stuff surprises you. Sometimes you can know someone for a really long time and then learn something that they believe or don't believe or that they feel really strongly about can just come as a total curveball.
No, it's definitely true. I mean, I think that so I guess today is like National Coming Out Day. And it's the same kind of thing for that. When you come out, all of a sudden people are like, oh, you've been a gay the whole time. Although in this case, they're coming out as racist, which is decidedly less cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So, I mean, like her question, right, is it too late to say anything? And then if so, what can I say? And what do I say to try to change their mind? So that's a couple questions. And like one is, no, I don't think it's too late to say anything. I don't ever think it's too late to say anything, basically. Like, if anyone just needs like blanket permission to bring something up, you have it from me right now. Bring it up. It's okay.
Yeah. Doesn't I live in the land of non-confrontation in Portland, but I'm a big fan of direct communication. If there's an issue, if you actually value these people, say something. Say something to them now.
Do you think that she should send back a group text message, or do you think that she should talk to them in a different format?
I guess it depends on how many of those people are her closest friends. If they are all her closest friends, perhaps a group text message, but she could quickly get drowned out. Maybe saying a statement in there like, I firmly disagree, I'm going to reach out to you individually, and then do so.
I think that that's a good point. Like, I understand. It's obviously we're even further out now from when she wrote the letter. So it might be late to text a reply, especially since she deleted the thread.
Right.
But I think there's kind of two things to bear in mind here. One of which is just you want to register that you really don't agree. And the other one is you want to have a conversation and you're kind of hopeful that you could change some of their minds. And I think you need to remember those are two really different things. For you to just say like, I think you've really mischaracterized the Black Lives Matter movement. I think you said things that really offended and hurt me, especially as a person of color. And I just want you to know that. And I think it's really okay for you to say that and to not worry about if I don't change their minds, then it wasn't worth having this conversation. because it's very possible that you won't, or at least not in the moment. And I just want you to know that it is worth speaking up, both for your own behalf and also on behalf of like other people that they're, you know, mischaracterizing and slandering. Like, I think it's really good to speak up in moments like this, especially with close friends, even if it does not result in immediate change.
And you might still end up chalking it up to a life lesson and walking away. And in some ways, that's also politically powerful. If people know that they can lose a friend over racist, bigoted beliefs, they might be more inclined to think about it some more. Right. It is maybe the first time they've been challenged in their whole life because they've perhaps been surrounded by other white people who have sort of racist views informed by white supremacy in our nation. And like, they're just walking around repeating these things to each other occasionally, and everyone's saying, haha, you bet. And saying, actually, not only don't agree, I don't even want to hang out with you anymore. This is really infuriating and disgusting. Like, that's real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, they clearly thought that that what they said was going to be received well. They thought it was going to be agreed with. They thought it was going to be appropriate. Like, they thought they were in a, like, safe space. And I think for you to let them know, not only do I really disagree with what you said, it hurt me to learn that you think this way. And I think that that can be really powerful for someone to realize, like, this is not just people as an idea or in the abstract. This is somebody I know. And again, that doesn't mean that they're going to immediately say, my God, you're right. I really need to like examine what I'm doing with my life and change. But like, I think it would be damaging to you to not say anything. I think it would be painful for you to continue these friendships while you're in the back of your head. You're thinking, now I know this about them. And they think, I think it's fine. Like, I think that would cause you pain. And I don't want you to go through that.
And imagine being at a party or somewhere social and them saying this in public and you being associated with them as well, right? It's going to be even more difficult at that moment to say something. It's better to say something now, make sure they know. And it's likely, I'm going to go out on a limb and say these might be friends that you have known for a long time, maybe through childhood. Mm-hmm. I had to find a lot of new friends as an adult, both because of moving and because of coming out. And it's so much better when you're an adult and you can talk about things that are important at the get-go and you aren't just united by the region that you grew up in or the sports team that you both watch. You like have other things to chat about. So the likelihood of this happening again, it might be low because maybe you talk about this stuff more often now, or maybe it comes up, you'll be more aware.
Yeah. No, and I'm just sorry. I mean, that just had to have felt so disheartening and isolating to wake up after a shooting, see a bunch of text messages from people you were close with that were, you know, racist and hateful. Like, that just had to be painful. It had to make you feel isolated. It had to make you feel like you were unaware of their true nature. And it had to just make you feel like close to racism in a way that was painful to you. And I'm just sorry. And I think you have every right to say that was not okay. And it caused me pain and it makes me not want to be close with you. And I hope you reconsider. And I hope that they do.
I hope they do too.
I hope you get an apology. But even if you don't, even if they don't change their minds, if they respond really defensively, like, they're letting you know what kind of people they are. And that gives you all the information you need to pursue other friendships with other people.
And there are so many awesome people out there to meet and hang out with that won't wake you up in the morning.
Who do not respond to shootings by sending racist text messages.
Yeah, who may even like go with you to rallies or like work with you on activism. So
Yeah. Okay. So on a completely different note, the subject of our next letter is Ambien Zombie Husband, which feels like such a throwback to like 7 years ago. I feel like 7 years ago, everybody had Ambien problems. I don't know if you remember that like kind of well-known comic. It's like a guy standing by his window in his pajamas and he's holding his keys out the window, talking to a walrus in a top hat that's sitting outside. And he's just like, not now, Ambien walrus. I have to lose my car keys.
I don't remember that, but I remember there being like YouTube videos of like maybe Ambien Olympics.
Oh my God.
There were YouTube videos that people would film of themselves taking Ambien and then staying up and then sort of coercing that state of like wildness.
That is just a misuse of prescription drugs.
I completely agree.
I do not endorse that on my podcast where I give advice to people. But I also, I'm thinking of a couple of specific people I remember from a very different time in my life who found a lot of joy in taking Ambien, not as prescribed, and then riding that bananas line of
that gravy train.
Being awake and dreaming.
Yep.
Anyways, I don't want to reminisce along those lines any further. I will now read this letter. Dear Prudence, My husband has a job that involves night work, and he has an irregular sleep schedule, so he's prescribed Ambien to help him get to sleep. Unfortunately, this makes him, like many other users, sleepwalk and exhibit odd behavior. For example, I found him at 5:30 this morning, in his boxers, urinating off of our front porch. And we don't live in the country. These Ambien shenanigans used to be irritating at worst and humorous at best. And of course, my husband never has any recollection of them at all. However, we have a young baby, and I am terrified that my husband, in his somnambulant Ambien days, will go pick up the baby and end up dropping him or randomly leaving him someplace in the house or outside. The potential scenarios could go on and on. I've tried to talk to my husband about this, but all he says is that he needs Ambien to sleep or makes excuses or promises that he doesn't keep. I understand that his schedule is wonky and that he sometimes needs a sleep aid, but he won't even talk to his doctor about trying other medications. I've hidden and even thrown out the medication. I've threatened to call his doctor. He says he'll just go to another one. I've threatened to leave. I don't want to divorce him over something this stupid, but I also don't think it's unreasonable to feel that it's unsafe to have an amnesiac sleepwalker in the house with a young baby. But what do I do? He doesn't seem to get it. Am I being excessively paranoid about this threat to my child's safety? I certainly don't want to sit back and wait for something awful to happen before I do something about this. And I can't stay up all night to police an Ambien zombie.
Wow. Wow. Woo. There's a lot there. I mean, it starts off kind of seeming like, oh, this person has an issue with a side effect to a drug. And then it goes really deep into some relationship stuff.
Yeah. No, that was my first read on this, too. I read this beginning thinking, oh, we're going to have to figure out, like, maybe there's another drug that he could use or they could kind of talk about his behavior. And then it sort of turned into what looks like pretty classic addict behavior,
right?
Which is promising to change, breaking promises, promising to lie to doctors or to switch doctors. You're trying to hide their medication and they're finding other ways to get it. I mean, this is like kind of textbook addictive behavior. And I wonder if you have considered the possibility that your husband is abusing Ambien, not using it, and is in fact pretty okay with the prospect of losing his marriage so that he can continue using Ambien the way that he wants to.
Right. Because like none of those communication methods that he's responding with are okay. Right. He's refusing to actually chat with you about this. It sounds like refusing to go to the doctor with you to talk about this, not willing in any way, it seems like, to work with you on it, maybe also disregarding any potential threat or risk. It sounds like he's either not taking it seriously or just doesn't care.
Right.
Both of
I mean,
which
if
are
I were
disturbing.
If I were taking a sleep aid and someone told me, hey, like, you often wake up and wander around the house. You do things that are super inappropriate that I know you wouldn't do in your right mind, and it's making me really nervous. Like,
yeah.
I don't think my first response would be, well, as long as I keep getting my Ambien, fuck off. like, I'd be concerned. Like, it is inappropriate that your husband is responding to your concerns by saying, well, what are you going to do?
And especially with a baby involved. I think that's, you know, it was just the two of you, and he was goofing around and being ridiculous. That's still a problem. But the fact that there's a child safety involved makes me even more like anxious for you. And I'm so sorry this is happening.
Yeah. So I think we are both agreed on the fact that like this letter writer is not overreacting.
No.
I don't think you're being excessively paranoid. I feel like we're all fairly familiar with like the reports that some people have had of like driving on Ambien or, you know, doing really outrageous things. Again, it's not like PCP. I don't want to make it sound like anyone who takes Ambien is going to start flinging babies off the roof. But
totally.
He has a history of unpredictable behavior when he's on Ambien. And then even when he is not using it the next day, when you try to talk to him about what he does, he shuts down any feedback and basically has made it clear that like nothing's going to keep me from using Ambien. I don't care what you say to me. I'm going to find a way to invalidate it.
I also want to call out, you said, I don't want to divorce him over something this stupid. And I just want to make sure that you know this is not stupid. This is a safety risk. This is a real, actual problem. It may be an issue, like I said, of possibly him dealing with addiction. It may be issues of just like safety in a relationship. But A, you can divorce someone over just about anything, depending on the state that you're in, I think. And B, this would be a legitimate reason to leave someone if they are disrespecting and refusing to engage with you on any real level about something that you are extremely worried about, right? Like,
yeah,
this is unacceptable in a relationship.
Yeah, I just, I on the one hand, I'm totally like with this writer in the sense that like, I don't want to like ever casually advise people to leave their spouses, especially when there's a young child involved.
I always do. I
don't mind doing it. I just don't want to do it casually. I want to take a second and make sure that it's the best choice. I just like, I think you've already gone to the point where like you've threatened to call his doctor. Like trust has really broken down here, right? Like you're at a point where you feel like, okay, you don't listen. I'm going to go over your head and call your doctor. That's not a great sign that you guys are communicating well. And his response to that was, great, I'll find another one. And that's just such dangerous behavior. That to me says the most important thing in my life is that I get to keep using Ambien the way I want to, hell or high water, everyone else be damned. And that's not someone I would want to be married to.
I would also suggest, and I don't think that you would ever consider this, but in my family, in order to get someone to quit, people would often start doing something as well. Like my mom started smoking to get my dad to quit smoking. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't try to up the ante. Like, you're in the right, stay in the right, protect your kid, protect yourself, and, you know, maybe explore going to stay at a friend's house for a few days or something and just say, hey, I'm going to get out of town. Go stay with a friend or some family. Talk to them about it. Find a space where you feel comfortable getting some actual sleep and not worrying all night, because I'm sure it's keeping you up.
And take your kid with you when you go.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Take your kid with you.
Yeah. yeah. And I would say, like, talk to your own doctor. Talk to a therapist. Like, talk to somebody who is, like, a credible health professional and say, like, this is what happens when my partner uses the substance. Here's how he reacts when I try to talk to him about it. Because again, like replace Ambien with alcohol and this like reads like something out of The Lost Weekend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I've thrown out his booze, but he says that he's going to like do whatever it takes. Like this is not normal behavior. Your husband is not, he's not treating Ambien like a regular sleep aid, because if he were treating it like a regular sleep aid, he would say like, I'm really sorry. I had no idea I was doing this. I'm nervous that if I switch to something else, it won't be as effective and I'll be sleep deprived all the time. But obviously, safety first. Let's go to the doctor and talk about my other options. But this, yeah, no, I think you have to say, like, you've tried talking to him. You've tried hiding it. He's made it really clear that he is not interested in modifying his behavior at all. I think your next step is, I don't want to do this. This was not my goal. You've made it so clear that Ambien is, like, your first priority, that I'm moving out and I'm taking our child. And like, if you ever want to go to a doctor together and talk about your other options, like I would love to do that. But in the event that you can't do that, I'm going to take the steps that I think are necessary to keep our kid safe.
Yeah. And maybe try to have these conversations with an arbiter once you're out of the house, like some sort of couples therapist or something. So
yeah,
maybe hearing
like
a third party might help him understand how ridiculous he's being and how possibly abusive he's being.
Yeah. No, I mean, this, like, again, I don't want to like label a lot of like letter writers, partners, addicts, but this is classic addictive behavior, just
for
in
sure.
The sense of I will not listen to any kind of criticism of my behavior while I'm on the substance. I cannot give up this substance or modify my relationship to it in any way. This comes first. And like, I don't think he would do these things in his right mind. Like, I don't think in the light of day, he would say, it's so important to me that I'd be able to pee off the porch in the middle of the night that I'll let you leave our marriage. Like,
he's not like, I'm finally living. This is my midlife crisis. I'm so much enjoying, you know, just running around and losing my mind.
Right. I think he has gotten to a point where he feels like he needs Ambien in order to function, in order to live, in order to cope. And that anything that threatens his continued use and abuse of it is something that he has to fight. And unfortunately, that includes you. And I think the best thing you can do for yourself and your kid is to accept that you can't make him change his behavior. You have tried really, really hard. And now all you can do is take care of yourself and encourage him to be honest with his doctor about the side effects of Ambien and the way that he's treating it. Because there are other sleep aids out there, man. Like, that is not your only option. No,
it's
again, I just keep thinking through, like, if I had a sleep disorder and I had to take Ambien, I'd be like, okay, like, lock me in. You know what I mean? Like, lock me in the room.
Yeah.
Like, that's
werewolf,
suboptimal, but
werewolf
like,
protocol.
As long as our kid's a little one, like, hide the keys. Like, let's take certain precautions so that I can't do certain things. But he's just like, nope.
Yeah, you just say, like, I turn into werewolf at night, like, chain me up, don't let me out. And then later on, I'm going to, like, throw a sheep in there with me and I'll eat. It'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to advise people to chain anyone up either while they're...
No, I mean, that's extreme.
Because that could result in some possible self-harm. But yeah, no, he's not. Nope, not cool.
Not cool.
All right. Let's completely change tactics yet again and tackle a question about roommates.
Yeah, do you want me to read this one?
Yes, please.
All right. Subject is roommate crit.
By the way, if that was short for criticism or criteria.
Yeah. Or the race you do with bicycles. Definitely not the race you do with bicycles.
There's a race with bicycles called crit?
Yeah, you do crits. I think it's like the ones you go on tracks with. I don't know. I only ever did fixed gear races because I'm a weirdo.
I know that you're from Portland, but I don't want to talk about bicycling right now.
I'm still broken from the last time.
All right, read the letter.
I own my own home in a city where rents are rising and property is hot. I have 5 roommates who have lived with me for several years without incident. My best friend got screwed over by her ex, so I let her move in with me on a reduced rent so she could save up and get her life in order. Well, one girl got in conversation with her and let it slip that the rent I was charging her was a third of everyone else's. This has sparked a cold war. Apparently, it isn't fair. I reminded them that even with the internet and utilities, I wasn't charging them even half of what a studio apartment costs in our area. Since then, there have been fights and passive-aggressive attempts to punish me, like not taking out trash or blocking my car in with theirs. The entire situation is ridiculous, and I'd rather everything go back to the way it was, but I will give them 30 days eviction notice if it comes to that. It is only 2 of them who are the serious agitators, and I am really hurt and pissed off at them. I consider them friends, and I'm wondering if I have gone past the point of no return now. Any thoughts to get me out of this mess?
Oh, this one's so good. It's got everything.
Cold War.
Oh, my God. This is one of my biggest fears. I felt
honestly.
My blood pressure triple while I was listening to you read this letter.
It's infuriating. So I live in a place that rents are rising rapidly, and like I have more resources than a lot of folks because I work in tech, and I've thought about owning a house in the same regard, and reading this just like validated every fear that I've had about doing so. Like, oh God, I can't.
No,
I
and
can't
it's always
it.
The worst, whether it's like siblings when you're a little kid or roommates when you're an adult, when everyone gets into like scarcity thinking, where there's just like clearly what everyone's thinking is just it is unacceptable that anyone's paying less rent than I am. And I have got to let this pressure off somehow. And I like cannot accept it. So I need to like drive everyone bonkers until something gives.
And you don't say if these other roommates are your friends, right? So this is your best friend. This is like maybe a sister or a brother to you, right? And
they said that the other roommates are just like people who've lived with them for a couple years without incident. It sounds like they're friendly, but not close. And this person's a personal friend.
Right. And I think this is the hardest part about like doing something like offering like lower rents to people that you like is they start to think the relationship has shifted. It obviously seems like they think that you deserve to be treated badly for doing nice things for them. I mean, I think they've forgotten that the rent they pay, as you try to remind them, is a favor that you do for them every single month. It is a nice thing. It is not something you have to do or are obligated to do, and definitely isn't something you continue to need to do, except we're contractually obligated, right?
Right.
Yeah, like you get to say no. You get to ability to like say, hey, A, you can't get mad about this, and B, even if you are, you can't block my car or not take out the trash.
Yeah, I think part of what's rough, too, is that the letter writer says that it sounds like a pretty short term fix. Her friend was in a really rough living situation because of like getting vaguely screwed over by an ex. So she's just doing this to save up money. It's not like she's going to live here forever now and pay way less rent. And I don't know if she communicated that to her roommates when the friend moved in. Like, it's possible she was like, hey, Sandy lives here now, everyone.
Right.
But even so, like,
that's
you own the house, you're allowed to bring in a new roommate.
And you also don't say what the room situation is, right? I think part of what people get frustrated about sometimes is like, well, her room's bigger than mine and she pays $300 less a month. It also doesn't matter, right? I think that's a key thing. If you're staying with people that ostensibly are your friends or have become your friends, stick to what you've negotiated and like what other people are paying is none of your business. Like, it doesn't matter. Like,
right. Right. No, and it's just, yeah, this is a totally separate situation. I can certainly understand, like, if I were in their situation, I heard about it, I definitely understand feeling frustration. Like, I don't think that's an absurd reaction. I think the way they're expressing their frustration is outrageous. Right. So I totally understand, like, being a little knocked back. I even understand wanting to vent about it with friends. I even understand wanting to talk about it with your, like, landlord slash co-roommate. But not plucking their car in or refusing to take out the trash. Like, that's such an inappropriate response, especially when you yourself are already, like, receiving a really, really fair rent.
Right. I mean, a more than fair, right?
Brooke, this reminds me of the Bible.
Wait, where? Where in the
Remember,
Bible?
There's literally...
Quick,
okay,
I'm going to pull out my Bible and find the chapter.
We were both raised religious. So
yeah,
like, the parable of the day workers, right? From the
we
book
We both
of
had
Matthew.
Pastor dads.
It's true.
Oh, the day
true,
workers. Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
My producer just, like, put up a figure and then, like, ran away. And I wondered for a second if she was going to find a Bible. but no, it's the parable of the day's wages, right? In the book of Matthew, where Jesus is just like, I forget what the gist of what he was trying to say was, but he was like, hey, think about this stuff. Like, imagine a landowner, like, hires people to work in the field, and he hires some people in the morning, and he's like, here's how much I'll pay you. And they were like, we agree. And then later, he realizes there's more work, and he hires some more people, and he's like, here's the same amount. And they're like, we also agree. And then the first group of people got super mad. And he was like, did you not agree to that payment in the beginning? Which is, like, a weird thing for Jesus to be talking about. But the point is, your roommates are acting just like these people, which is to say, like, your rent is already good. You don't have to worry about other people's business because your arrangement is fair. And, like, keep your eyes on your own paper. And I feel like maybe Jesus was speaking directly to this letter writer.
I was about to say store up your treasure in heaven, but I don't think that's appropriate here. So,
yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm not here to, like, try to interpret things from the Bible because clearly I barely remember what I'm talking about. But the point is, yeah. So, I feel like you're already at a point where you're ready to give them 30 days notice, even though you don't want to. They're behaving really passive aggressively. And I think the best response to passive aggression is directness.
For sure.
I think you should call a good old fashioned roommate meeting, which is everyone's favorite. Everyone loves it. No one will try to sneak out of it or, like, sit sullenly in the corner. And it's going to suck, but just do it and just be like, hey, guys, like, I want to address this together. Because, like, the current way of handling it is not okay. I know that some of you found out that Sandy here has been getting a different rate. I just want to acknowledge that. She's going through a really hard time. She's a friend of mine. She's trying to save up so that she can get a place of her own. This is a temporary situation. I, like, regret that you all found this out because I don't want you guys to start comparing rents with one another. But also, since you found this out, you've been doing things like refusing to take out the trash and blocking my car, which is not cool and makes living at home stressful and unpleasant. And I don't want to do that. I think that what I charge you guys is really fair. It's way less than what you would pay for a studio apartment in this neighborhood. And I want to ask you to stop trying to subtly punish and ice me out. If you can do that and we can go back to the way things were before, awesome. And if not, let's agree to part ways and you guys can look for another place and see if you can find rent elsewhere that you prefer. But that's what's on the table right now. I'm not going to start charging her more and I'm not going to start charging you less. This is the deal. And you can either stop trying to punish me by blocking in my car, which I know you're doing on purpose, or you can, you know, move out.
And I think emphasize too, like, hey, I know that we're friendly and I know that we may even be friends, but I'm still your landlord. This is still something we've agreed upon either in writing or whatever else. Rent is what you're paying. I'm sorry if you no longer agree with that. We can end our business contract. But you know, maybe it would be, if these people are your friends, it might be better after all for them to move out while, you know, before they get more and more frustrated with you. I think what happens sometimes in these housing situations too is you become the proxy parent. So people have issues with their mom or their dad. And as soon as someone else has authority over them or perceived authority, they start to take it out on them.
Sure.
Like all of a sudden it's been revealed that, you have more power than them. And they're like, oh, I can't even take it.
Right. So they feel like the only thing that they can do to get back at you is to block in your car, which not appropriate. But I also I do understand where they're coming from because they feel like you have all the power. They're experiencing an unfair situation and that's the most that they can do about it.
Yeah. And it sounds like you did the right thing, you know, taking your friend and giving her like a place to stay. Like congrats on that. Like, good job.
Yeah. That was like, that's really nice
really,
of you.
Really cool. That's a great reason to have a house.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just feel bad that they can't kind of like rally together and be like, it's really cool that you are like letting this person save money so that they don't have to live with like their terrible ex who like left them in the lurch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I doubt your friend was bragging about the amount she was. She probably wasn't like, I'm only paying $200 for this place. Like, seriously, doubt
right,
the thought came
right,
up
like,
too, right?
I'm so glad I went through a terrible breakup with someone who, like, screwed me over financially, because now I have cheap rent for a few months while
right.
I completely, like, try to rearrange my upended life.
Yeah, so worth it. Would do again.
Yeah, I think got to be direct. Do not start blocking in their cars, because that would just make everyone unhappy. And
nope.
If they're like really shitty, then, you know, give them 30 days notice. That is allowed.
Yeah, it sounds
you
like you won't
have
problems.
With them forever.
You won't have any problem finding new roommates if you need to. It sounds like you're a great landlord. So
yeah, the one thing I would say is definitely like brush up on tenants' rights in your area.
For sure.
If you are a landlord, like make sure that you give them everything that they are entitled to within legal limits and whatever that looks like. Maybe it's longer than 30 days notice. Maybe it's written notice. Whatever they are entitled to, make sure that you know it and offer it to them, because that is a good thing to do. And don't let the fact that you're angry with them allow you to retaliate in kind, because you have more institutional power behind you. If you retaliated in kind, it would carry more weight.
Also, be very sure to protect yourself. Whenever you're in one of these situations, even if people are friendly or you're friends of yours, especially if they're friends of yours, have a contract, have something written up, get someone to look over it. You just want to protect yourself in this situation,
right?
Because like things can go wrong. Breakups can happen. Like,
yep.
People can feel betrayed, and then they can go after you, and you can end up in a lot more legal issues and troubles than you should over some sort of like interpersonal conflict. So
I'm just remembering now, I used to have a roommate who was in the process of going to small claims court with a former roommate who had like never released the security deposit and like didn't like the way that their living situation had ended. So had just sort of like refused to turn over keys, just like dragged their feet, like wouldn't
wow.
let them take stuff out of a common area. And it was just a nightmare for her. And it was just
yeah.
like when things deteriorate to that point, especially with someone you're living with, it's just miserable. It's never fun. I felt really bad for her. She was really nice.
And hopefully you can nip this in the bud before it gets to that point. I mean, it sounds like there's some crap that's happening. It doesn't sound like the worst necessarily. Hopefully they're receptive to talking and
right.
can say, oh, I'm sorry, I was being a jerk. Thank you so much again for letting me stay here. Like, this is an awesome place. And then you can move forward. That would
right.
be great.
Right. And sometimes people will respond if they are like really like digging their heels into the passive aggressive tactic. And you'll say like, and you guys have been, you know, not taking out the trash and blocking in my car. And sometimes people will choose to respond to that with plausible deniability and say, I don't know what you're talking about. And that's just bullshit. And you don't have to like get into an argument to convince them of what they're doing, because that would just make you feel like you were being driven slowly insane. And you can
yeah.
just say, here's the dynamic. It's really clear to me. If you're not going to acknowledge it, I'm going to take that as a sign that you don't want to live here. Like, just get that really clear. Don't let them make you think that you're crazy for noticing what you're noticing. I hope they don't do that. But sometimes when people go the passive aggressive route, they really commit.
They really do. Or it might even say something like, well, you block in my car sometimes too, right? And it's just like, look, that's not about that. We're talking
yes.
about this other thing. It
oh,
doesn't
I'm just
matter.
Like, I'm having so many flashbacks to so many different roommate meetings I've had over the years where, like, all of a sudden, once someone decides to bring up a complaint, everyone's finally ready to say all the things that have been bothering them that they've been
oh,
keeping
right.
up inside. Where it's just like, and you never wash your forks. Like, I count forks in your room all the time. And it's just like, oh, no. Now
right.
is the time.
And your cat smells bad. I think house meetings are the reason why I no longer live in punk houses, among many other things, like being in my 30s. But mm-hmm. don't miss it.
I really want to have you back on the show and have an entire theme where the episode is just advice from the perspective of someone who has lived in punk houses.
Yes. Awesome. I'm into it.
We're going to do
just
that.
Like,
we're going to do that.
You should own more than one pair of pants. You kind of smell.
If you can afford to own more than one pair of pants, yeah, I definitely like recommend it, just to have one for nighttime and one for daytime even.
It's not a bad idea.
I don't know if there was a theme today. The theme was, what? Oh, man.
The theme is communication.
The theme is so much.
The theme is
being
direct.
Life is such a rich
yeah.
tapestry. the just most sumptuous, rich tapestry ever strewn across a castle wall. Brooke, thank you so much.
Oh my God, thank
okay.
you. Yeah, that was fun.
Now
I mean, I don't know if it can count as fun, but we had a good time.
I enjoyed it immensely, and I'm looking forward to the next time that you come into the studio. Well, we live in dark times, and this was kind of a dark episode. So I want to close out on a semi-regular reminder that I offer people who follow me on Twitter, which is that there is a non-zero chance that Eartha Kitt once had a threesome with James Dean and Paul Newman. I don't have proof. I don't have, like, hard evidence. If you're one of those people who says, you know, everyone was only straight and had monogamous sex with one person at a time until like 1985. I don't know that I'm ever going to have enough evidence to satisfy you, but I want you to know that there's a non-zero chance that it happened. There's a very smutty book that was once written about various Hollywood goings-on in which the author purportedly asked Eartha about whether or not this actually happened, because she used to give dance lessons to Jimmy Dean. He was like, Eartha Kitt, will you teach me how to dance? And like, yeah, maybe those two beautiful live actors just danced in the afternoons together. But you've seen Dirty Dancing. You know what happens when gorgeous people like start expressing themselves physically. Just take it into consideration. Anyways, the author reportedly asked Eartha what it was like. And she said, I had them both in one afternoon and I came to the conclusion that white boys are delicious. Maybe Eartha Kitt said that. Maybe she didn't. I know which world I want to live in, and I invite you to join me there. As the Sufi mystic Rumi once said, beyond the idea of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. Let us meet there. Let's meet there. I love you all. Thank you for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Casey Miner. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. Reviews help new listeners find the podcast, which means more questions and more advice. Just search for Slate Dear Prudence. I'd love to answer your question. Call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it to about 30 seconds or a minute, and send it to me at prudencepodcast@gmail.com.